I want to report on a little project, sort of a side project I've carried out. A lot of this work was done by an undergraduate student, Justin Heinecke, who graduated last year. And this is work in conjunction with collaborators from Berkeley, Ron Amundsen, and his former student, Stephanie Ewing, who's now at USGS in Boulder. And this project involved cation sources and nutrient sources to the Atacama Desert in Chile. And just to, is there a laser pointer? I can probably use, okay, I can use this. Just to remind those of you who know, or to show those of you who never knew, the Atacama Desert is just inland of the coastal range in Chile, and it goes up into Peru a little bit. So it's to the east of the coastal range and to the west of the Altiplano and the Andes. And the Atacama Desert is considered the driest desert on Earth, perhaps outside of Antarctica. Some of the characteristics of this and the part of the desert that I'll be talking about, it ranges from arid to hyper-arid, and the particular area I'm focusing on is really at the arid hyper-arid transition to hyper-arid. It's had long-term aridity. It's been very dry for a very long time on a million-year time scale. There's some debate as to exactly how long, but it's sufficiently long that there's been major atmospheric deposition because there's so little weathering and removal of material. The dust that comes into this desert simply accumulates and accumulates, and you get massive sulfate and nitrate deposits, among other things there. So it's kind of a nice sedimentary record of dust, essentially, because of its very unique long-term aridity. Now, this is kind of a, what we want to address were the sources of the dust to the desert itself over the long time scale, and the extent to which these sources may have changed over time. And this is a diagram, simple enough really for a geochemist to understand, actually. And the Atacama Desert is shown schematically here. Potential sources of atmospheric deposition include coastal fog, which occasionally makes incursions into the desert a little ways, not very far. So that's sort of a marine source. We do have volcanic ash from the Andes on major eruptions that can get into parts of the desert. There's local reworking of sources. And then there are these salars, which are essentially dried lake beds in the Altiplano, which contain salts from weathering that ultimately took place in the Andes and was carried down to these plains and then evaporated. So these salars, this is an example of what they look like, very vast salt areas, and they're obviously a very good potential source of dust to the desert. Our approach is to use strontium 8786 ratios as a tracer for these sources, again, to try to understand where they come from, how they've changed over time, what may have affected any changes that have happened, and also what happens after the dust, particularly cations like calcium, are deposited. To what extent are they reworked in the soil in this extremely dry climate? Now, strontium isotopes have been applied to the Atacama Desert previously by Jason Reck and co-workers from University of Arizona. And what they found was that if they took several transects and took samples from near the soil surface, and if you look at, focus on the red dots here, which are the strontium 8786 ratios, this is a plot of the ratios as you go inland from the coast on a transect toward the Andes side. And near the coast where there's fog influence, the strontium has kind of a seawater isotopic composition, or near seawater isotopic composition. As you move away from the coast, the strontium, and this is strontium in sulfate in the soil, gets the 8786 ratio decreases and approaches what they consider to be an Andean weathering signature. So the signature changes from that of seawater to more Andean weathering, which might reflect salars, and it shows up best in this transect. So we want to, this is a very good starting point, and we want to look in more detail at profiles and see how things varied with depth. And our approach was to focus in on one area and look at a climate transect, such as it is. It's really a transect from arid, hyper-arid transition to hyper-arid, so it's not a huge difference in rainfall, but we're looking at different atmospheric sources of calcium in the sulfate, in the carbonate, and in the silicate components of the soil. So our three sites range from arid hyperarid transition, the Copiapó site with 20 millimeters of mean annual precipitation to 10 millimeters, and then the driest site, Yungay, less than 2 millimeters annual precipitation, which is certainly hyperarid. There are people out in this area who've never experienced rainfall in their lives. Our approach was to extract these components from the soil was to do sequential leaches. So we took the sieve sample, leached it with water to get the soluble salts, which are primarily sulfate. That residue was leached with dilute acetic acid to get any carbonate that may have been present, plus exchangeable cations. And then the residue we dissolved in HF and analyzed that to get the mostly silicate component, plus any oxides or other insoluble phases that may have been in there. And just to check our separation, this is a plot of sulfur versus calcium of our leachates, the blue being the water leach, and they mostly fall along the one-to-one line, suggesting leaching of gypsum, which we expected. And the acetic acid leaches, which are carbonate, if you focus in on that box down below and blow it up, they essentially had no sulfur in them, suggesting we got a very clean separation of sulfate from carbonate, so we're not cross-contaminating our two phases when we look at the strontium in them. So I'm going to start by showing our results in these profiles as a function of depth, starting with the Yungay site, which is dry, and this is the pit there. And you can see that if you look at a plot of strontium A786 versus depth, it's a generally decreasing isotopic ratio with depth or increasing toward the surface, a general trend like that. We see similar type trend in the intermediate rainfall site, the Altamira, except that there's a good separation between the carbonate and the sulfate components. Again, they both increase toward the surface, but the separation suggests that they're not in isotopic equilibrium with each other. So things aren't really exchanging even within individual layers within the profile. And then at the so-called wet site, we also have a general trend of decreasing, again, with some variation in there. If we put it all together to see how they compare to each other, the wet and the dry sites in orange and blue plot together, and the intermediate site plots off to itself. If we think about what are the potential sources of strontium to these sites, marine-derived strontium would have a high ratio, so it would plot off to the right. So it would tend to pull things toward the right. So if there's an increasing influence from marine strontium over time, we might expect this increasing trend that we observe. The other Andean weathering component, defined by Reck and co-workers, encompasses some of the samples, but it actually doesn't fit some of the others, suggesting that there's additional sources. And we looked at silicate residue, local silicate, or the silicate residue in the soil itself, and it overlaps but shows a much greater range. And we see that for all the sites. So that doesn't seem to be the primary source for the salt strontium. And if we look carefully at this silicate source and plot it in an isochron diagram, we actually see it, even though this age is somewhat meaningless, it does define an age which is Mesozoic, which corresponds to the Mesozoic granite bedrock in this area, suggesting a local source for the silicate. And the granite bedrock shown in pink here is quite abundant in this region. So to summarize then this kind of work in progress, what we're seeing in these soils is Andean sources are most likely dominant in terms of their strontium isotope composition. But there's a potential that there was an increase in marine input over the last 2 million years. This shift could also be changed by a systematic change in the solar source as well. So that shift we see is that upward increase in 87-86. We also see limited isotopic exchange between carbonate and sulfate, so these things are not communicating with each other. There's really not enough water in this profile for these things to be mixed together. And you see that particularly in this Altamira site, where carbonate and sulfate from the same level are not in isotopic equilibrium. And this kind of goes against some of the calcium isotope work of my co-authors, and we haven't sort of sorted out how to resolve the strontium and the calcium yet. We're working on that. The silica material appears to be locally derived from parent material and local weathered silicate particles, and again, this is evidenced by this pseudo-isochron diagram. And finally, we seem to have a decoupling of silicate and salt sources, and possibly decoupling of gypsum and carbonate sources as well, and very minimal contribution from in-situ silicate weathering in these profiles. So it does clearly seem to be a case of the salts being derived from external sources with essentially no internal contribution as a result of this hyper-arid to arid climate. And then I'd just like to acknowledge our funding sources. Thank you very much.
Any time for questions?
What sort of particle size range should you relate that to your profile?
Well, it actually varies quite a bit. I mean, these are all sieved to less than 2 millimeters. But you get everything from clay size to actual, you know, small sand size grains. There's also individual gypsum nodules at some of these levels. And some of these soils actually have, they had to actually dig the trenches with jackhammers because the gypcrete was so hard that was the only way to get through. In fact, some of them they couldn't get through with jackhammers. So there's really quite a variable texture to it.
So it's somewhat stratified.
Yeah. Well, that's a hard thing to figure out. I think what that's telling us is that we can't get too global at this site, or even too regional. I think there may be a somewhat more local solar site, which somehow, because of the prevailing patterns, you know, a particular source kind of gets funneled over to that region. It still shows the same increase as you go from bottom to top in the ratio, which I think is interesting, but it's really significantly offset. And because it's intermediate in rainfall, it's hard to explain it in terms of weathering processes or pedogenic processes. So that's a hard thing, but I think it's a local versus regional source issue.
How far apart were the three sites?
I'd have to look at my... Matt, how long did I have? I thought I had 15 minutes.
I'm sorry?
How long did I have to do this?
You got 25 seconds.
Oh, okay. Great, I don't have a scale. See, I only went to one of these sites. Okay, yeah. So there are, yeah, on the order of tens to, looks like 100 kilometers, a couple hundred kilometers separation. So pretty significant.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
Thanks.
Appreciate it.